South Korea's Professional Football League has imposed a record fine on one of its clubs for placing sex dolls in empty seats during a recent match played without spectators due to the coronavirus pandemic. FC Seoul was forced to apologize this week after TV and online viewers were spotted about 24 sex dolls dotted around the stadium during the club's 1-0 win over Gwangju FC on Sunday. Social media users complained about the dolls, some of which were wearing the club's shirts. Others had been dressed in t-shirts or were holding placards advertising a sex toy seller and a popular online streamer who apparently inspired their design. Media reports said the club apologised for causing deep concern to fans, but claimed the dolls had been delivered due to a mix-up with the supplier. Yeah, of course. Adding that it had received assurances before the match they were not intended for sexual purposes. On Thursday, the K-League fined FC Seoul a record $100 million, $81,000, saying the club had deeply humiliated female football fans and damaged the 38-year-old league's reputation. After reviewing the case, the league officials accepted FC Seoul's claim that it did not know the mannequins were sex toys, but said it could have easily recognized their use using common sense and experience. Oh, yeah. The league said in a statement, the controversy over this real doll incident has deeply humiliated and hurt women fans and damaged the integrity of the league. FC Seoul, the 2016 league champions, accepted the decision, apologized, and promised to prevent a repeat of the incident. So that wonderful article came out of The Guardian. So, Luke, as our guest, you can start us off here. Are you appalled by FC Seoul's actions here?
I would like to say that I think that the outrage to that particular issue is grossly inflated, and that those dolls would be used to that kind of deep humiliation. And I think it brings a whole new meaning to having your fans really rooting for you. So,
oh, dear, that's my thoughts. Anyway. That was fantastic. Jesus Christ, you. You weren't kidding about those dad jokes. That was amazing. You are Olympic level dad joke artist. But look, let's get serious about this, as this is a very serious story. and I'd like to say, who cares about them putting sex dolls around the stadium? I don't understand why it is a big deal. I guess, I don't know, maybe families are watching. If you have a look at the photo, it's not that obvious that they're sex dolls.
Honestly, I don't see it being a big issue. There's been a separate news article that I saw during the week of someone doing it in a restaurant. In a restaurant, I can understand that being a little bit, like, poor taste. But
A bit closer on as well, yeah.
I think the real issue is if someone says that they ordered that many sex dolls by mistake. Yeah, fucking right. You order one doll by mistake, sure. You don't order that many things by mistake. You know what's getting charged to your credit card by that point. There is no mistake.
Could have easily been recognized with using common sense and experience was the quote. It's like, yeah, I guess, yeah, the common sense, they probably should have figured that out when they, had gaping mouths and whatnot. But I believe they covered them up with masks, which is really on theme at the moment. What do you think about this, Lockie? Are you crying on the inside right now?
I feel like this has to be a joke. I mean, how do you not fucking know that they're sex dolls when you receive them in the crate? Like, all the people that are working and getting it all set up, they had to have known. I mean, it's not something that you just, I mean, what happened? Do you reckon that they opened up the crate, they realized that there were sex dolls, but the event was going on in a couple of hours, so they're like, well, let's stick some masks on these things and go for it. I mean, you know, we're all getting paid by the hour.
No way. It was a matter of, I bet you that streamer set it up. He did it to advertise his stream or whatever. It was just a big prank, and people were well aware of it, but just afterwards they were saying, oh, we just didn't know. That was as simple as that. Because I'm sure probably the higher-ups didn't know, but someone there on the ground level was having a bit of a wink and a nudge to everybody. I'm for sure, bloody certain of that.
Oh, yeah, that had to have happened. Someone's getting fired for this. That's so fucking funny. I hope they don't.
Someone absolutely blew it.
welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories and also your place to be for our impressions on the latest games coming out each and every week. My name is Zach and I am here with my illustrious co-host, Lockie, as I am every week, Lockie.
Howdy, howdy.
Yeah, I'm going all right, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. I'm doing very well. It feels a little bit different recording at a different hour to what we normally record. Recording in the nighttime, things feel a little bit more loosey-goosey than what they normally do. But I'm stoked that we are recording at this time because we were able to have our awesome guest on, Luke Retallick from the Party Loaded podcast. Luke, how you doing, mate?
Good, Zach. How you doing? I'm massively impressed that first time off the bat you got the pronunciation of the surname correct, but I suspect you might have listened to it a couple of times, so that probably helped. So, Yeah. Easy trap.
I was going to ask before the show, and I totally forgot, so I'm glad I pulled that off.
Good job. I'm impressed. Good job. No, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. And just to get us cracking, just tell the people a little bit about what you guys do over at Party Loaded and where everyone can find all the stuff that you guys do.
Yeah, so Party Loaded's a weekly podcast / stream that we do via Twitch and also sort of make available via all the standard podcast services as well. We basically chat about everything that's great in the world of video games. So every week takes part of us talking about sort of games that we're currently focusing on, chatting a bit about news as well, more from a commentative perspective rather than sort of being on the button with the hot sort of dropping sort of stuff because people can go online for that. And we typically have a discussion topic of some sort every episode as well, where we do like a deep dive on some sort of issue in the industry or have someone on for an interview, usually someone who works in the industry as well. So, we've been gone for a while. I think we're probably in about year 5 now, in the mid-200s. And we typically go for about an hour and a half every episode, so that's a lot of hours of listening content. So it is good. Myself and my current 3 co-hosts, all sort of the team that makes up Party Loaded, and basically you find all that stuff over at twitch.tv/partyloaded. Nice and easy.
And I definitely recommend checking these guys out. I've been listening to their show for months now. It's fantastic. They have great chemistry and great banter, and there's always some fascinating video game based conversations, and they're always a lot of fun as well too. You guys are an absolute crack up, and great with them puns, as you guys can hear from the top of the
episode. Put you on the spot then, Zach. I want you to tell me what was your favorite recent topic that we talked about, if you can give me a bit of feedback live. What did you like?
Favorite recent topic, the one on the episode, oh dear god, I'm gonna be cutting out all this so I can make it seem like I thought of this immediately. Fuck!
Luke guy is such a prick, isn't he?
Expansions. You're talking about the definition of expansions. That's right. And it was a very fascinating conversation. Don't base that on how much I listened to the show. Base that on just how atrocious my memory is, and that I listened to like fucking 10 gaming podcasts. It's absolutely ridiculous. I absolutely love the conversation you guys had about expansions and DLC recently, though I didn't find anyone sort of end up falling where I would sort of sit, which was that expansions, I always expect a fair bit more from than I would ever expect from a DLC, whereas an expansion can be DLC, but a DLC cannot be expansion, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
An expansion isn't an expansion unless it could potentially be repackaged as a new game. That's my opinion.
Okay. Damn.
Like Brood War is the pinnacle of expansions, and I know that definition's been pushed over the years, but that's where I stand on it.
I know a football stadium full of dolls that'll tell you all about expansions. So
yeah.
Oh god. Alrighty. Well, that being said, let's just get cracking with the gaming news, because we got some decent stories for us this week. Our first story comes from a publisher that I always love to talk about, Activision. Mm-mm-mm. My God, do I love me some Activision. And it's about a game series that I love, Call of Duty. I love me. Oh God, I got to stop with this sarcasm because it's just off-putting at this point. 2020 Call of Duty Black Ops will be Cold War based, apparently. This article was written by Joe Screbbles and comes out of IGN, News reports suggest this year's Call of Duty game will be titled Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War and will return to the Black Ops sub-series historical setting. The title was posted by Call of Duty leaker Okami on Twitter and backed up by sources of Eurogamer. Eurogamer added that it will return to the series' roots, but did not specify any specific events or locations. The real-life Cold War is regarded as having lasted from 1947 to 1991, in case you didn't know. Whether this is a reboot of the sub-series or a prequel to the Black Ops story, which has since headed into the future, is still unknown. Now, yeah, look, you could already tell from how I started the story with all that filthy, filthy sarcasm that... Yeah, all right, wow, the new Call of Duty is going to be in Cold War. I don't really care. I didn't play the previous Call of Duty, but I know a lot of people out there are probably going to be really excited to hear about this because it is the best-selling game of the year, every single year for over the last decade, bar I think like two years, where GTA and maybe something else took the reins, but my God.
Pretty confident it won't be this year.
not this year. Hopefully we might see Cyberpunk taking the reins for that one. But yeah, are you excited to hear that they're going back to the Cold War for the new Call of Duty, Luke?
Look, I'm not a massive COD guy, but I don't dislike the game's intent or anything like that. I kind of, you know, yeah, have a passing interest, but I don't tend to play all of them. Cold War is an interesting choice, I think, because there's not a lot of really major notable sort of conflicts that I think would lend themselves well to a COD game in that period. I mean, you've got the Korean War probably factors into that a bit. Cuban Missile Crisis, again, doesn't really seem to strike me as something that you'd base a COD game on. Berlin Blockade, not really. I don't know. There's not a lot there, I don't think, but it's an interesting period. It seems like it would suit a spy game a bit better to me. Something a bit more around the intelligence gathering sort of stuff. So
Yeah, agreed.
100%. Yeah, definitely. It's called the Cold War for a reason. There was not a whole lot of conflict.
Yeah,
yeah.
During that time, not going on in front of the cameras at the very least. But are you as excited as I am, Lockie?
No, God, sorry? No, no, fuck no. It's I mean, look, I don't have anything against COD either. If it's a decent multiplayer game, I'll pick it up, but I couldn't give two fucks about the campaign. I'm one of those people that, yeah. Do you remember that whole controversy? What was that game where they only released a multiplayer version of it and they dropped the campaign and everyone was pissed off? It had robots or something in it. What was it?
That was the last...
Titanfall?
No, that was the last COD, I'm pretty sure. That was...
Was that a COD?
Or was it Battlefield, maybe?
No, I had mechs in it. What was that?
No, you're thinking it. Titanfall was the
Titanfall
one.
Titanfall. Yeah, that's it. That's
Call of Duty.
Yep. That's it. That's it. It was Titanfall that pissed everyone off. I think it was Titanfall 2 where they dropped the campaign.
No. The campaign in Titanfall 2 is the highlight of that game. It's really freaking good.
Yeah.
You've got it exactly in reverse. Mm.
No, but wasn't it? Weren't they? No, didn't they say prior to release that they weren't gonna bother with the campaign, and they were gonna charge you full price for the multiplayer functionality? And everyone got
pissed
off.
Yeah, that was Call of Duty Black Ops 4. That wasn't anything with mechs in it.
Yeah, that was. Yeah.
Oh my God,
no mechs.
Oh well, then I feel bad for all the Titanfall fans out there because I've kind of just taken a massive shit on their friends.
Titanfall 1 was exactly what you're describing. It was pretty much only multiplayer,
yeah,
if memory serves. But the difference is that they set expectations correctly early on and actually made it clear to everybody that that's what it was. So
Okay. All right, so it's another fucking bland COD game, and whatever.
Look, we'll see. I don't know. Every year, last year I thought things are going to be might be way different, but then I guess every year if we're getting games every year, we're only going to be expecting minor iterations. Even though I know they work on them for 3 years at a time, but I don't know. I feel like they're kind of the FIFA of war games at the moment, and I don't know. And I've already decided anyway. I'm never giving my money to Activision ever again. So, you know, if a pre-owned copy comes out at some stage, it's pretty cheap, I might pick it up.
But, do you think anyone out there is actually, you know, jumping out of their seat over the idea of, oh, finally, we get to go after the Russians again? Yes.
The short answer is yes, there will be.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just all it needs to do is be another Call of Duty, especially in the Black Ops series, and it's gonna sell millions and millions of copies. It's just as simple as that. People just keep buying it, and they will forever. I work in a retail store what sells games, and God, Call of Duty's just flying off the shelves, you know, running out and having to get new shipments in. It is insane. People absolutely love Call of Duty. I think I'm just over it at this point. I had my time with it in my early 20s, and now I'm just over it. But yeah, anyway,
There was one interesting COD game that I thought it was a pretty interesting premise. It was all about how it was all based around Kevin Spacey molesting this underage actor, and the global fallout of that. Somehow they tied it in with satellite based missile launches. So they would shoot out from space or from orbit these big hunks of metal just to absolutely decimate population. Yeah, so that was an interesting premise, that one. I don't think we can expect that level of creativity, even though it was pretty controversial at the time. I think they'll play it safe for this one and just say, yeah, Russians are bad guys again.
I don't think you'll see Kevin Spacey in any mocap situations in any games anytime soon.
Well, that's a shame because he was kind of the best part because clearly he's a terrible human being, and that's not an act. It's just that's him naturally, and that's the scary part.
Okay, look, let's move on from this, from one game that I'm not going to be buying to another game that I'm actually, you know, a bit, unfortunately I won't be buying this one because I actually kind of do want to buy it a little bit, and that's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. The remake,
yes,
that's coming out later on in the year. Now, that isn't going to include microtransactions at launch. Now, this article was written by Liam Croft and comes out of Push Square. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 has to be classed as one of the year's best feel-good announcements. And better yet, you won't have to fork out any extra cash beyond the game's recommended retail price of $39.99, so it's probably going to be closer to like $55-$60 Australian, something like that. That's because this is a budget-friendly release which won't feature any microtransactions at launch. In an interview with GameSpot, Vicarious Visions boss Jen O'Neill said that the remake won't include any additional purchases when it releases on 4th of September 2020. Everything that you see at launch is going to be unlocked with gameplay. We're not planning on having monetization at launch. GameSpot states that if there is a demand for extra content further down the road, the team may reconsider this approach. Vicarious Visions doesn't explicitly say that payment would take the form of microtransactions. However, this could simply be a paid expansion, so we'll have to see what happens. Elsewhere, O'Neill hinted at the possibility of crossplay. Falling short of actually confirming the feature, he says, "When the time comes, we will say more. It sounds like one for the future then." So look, I know they've sort of tried to imply with this here that they're not going to have microtransactions at launch, but they may put in, you know, some like larger, you know, DLC or expansions later on down the track. But it's, you know, I still can't help but notice that they're just saying there will be no microtransactions at launch. And Activision, I remember doing with a very beloved remake that came out a little while ago now, the CTR remake, didn't have microtransactions at launch either. And then a month later, nice little patch to put all that stuff back in there. And at this point, you know, we've already got the game out on the shelves. Parents have already bought it for their kids. Reviewers have already reviewed it. So I do not like the practice of doing something like this. And I'm really hoping it's not going to become an industry standard, my dear God. Does this ring any alarm bells for you, Lockie? This whole microtransactions at launch comment.
You know what? Look, I think you're absolutely spot on. You know, they have a big in bold at launch symbol there, but there'll definitely be DLC and add-ons and all sorts of stuff because it's a skateboarding game. They'll release all sorts of packs and things that are very niche and specific that you know, will appeal to somebody, and I don't really have any issue with that. I mean, as long as the base game is properly put together and you get good fun out of it. I actually don't have a huge issue with the concept of DLCs, because if I really, really like a game, and I want to get more use out of it, DLCs are an awesome way of stretching that out and actually getting you to revisit old games and look at it with a fresh coat of paint. I think it's good.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think it's more... It really all depends on how it's implemented, I guess.
Yeah.
Because when I think DLC, I think of like either like, you know, some kind of as you know, story expansion or something like that. Obviously not in Tony Hawk's, it's not going to be, but like that's what I'll think of when I think of DLC. So maybe I'll know some new like maps to ride around or whatever, to skate around. I don't know, but it's just the phrasing microtransactions that's making me more think that it's going to be, you know, a million skins that you can't get unless you start forking out a bit of cash, or, you know, some kind of skater pass or weekly skater pass or something like that. I don't know. Does this get you worried at all, Luke, or are you not really too fussed about microtransactions in your games? How do you feel about this?
I'm generally not particularly fussed at the existence of microtransactions as long as they're done right. I think there's a lot of ways it can be done wrong. I mean, the very word microtransaction doesn't red flag to me. It's more how they're implemented than anything else. But I think the other issue now, especially recently with one of the big changes that they made to the American ESRB rating system, is that there now is a specific rating that actually covers games with microtransactions in them, and it gets put on the packaging. So them actually coming out ahead and saying this, I think, is actually partly catering to that requirement, where they need to be very clear up front as to what is contained within that initial product. So stating it is probably something they're actually required to do now, and that's why they're coming out and saying we don't have any microtransactions. And it's one of those things that maybe they don't want to draw a huge amount of attention to, because theoretically you shouldn't have to say it unless there are any, as opposed to having to say it if there's not. But that's the world we live in now. And, you know, the reputation they have as a publisher, I guess, perhaps lends itself to people assuming that there might be by default. So I don't know. I don't have any issue with them adding extra cosmetic stuff or you know, new maps or courses or anything like that. I think a skating game is well suited to that kind of content anyway. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah. No issue for me at all.
I guess for me personally, if it's a free to play game, I think you know, nickel and dime all you want. You're getting the game for free. You got to make your money back somehow. But when you're already paid for the game, like, say, if they release, like, DLC packs or something like that, you know, you pay, like, $10, you get a whole bunch of skateboards, skins, and a couple of courses to skate around, whatever. Mm. But if it's, like, you know, they have a new skin in the shop every single day and you got to buy it that day. And if there's random elements as well too, which I believe we covered on the show a few weeks back, they have to also include in the rating system if there's random elements to the loot in the game as well too, then that's another thing that also gets me worried. And Activision is definitely not beyond putting loot boxes in their games as what we've seen in the past. So I guess, look, at this stage, it is really a big wait and see though as well too.
I can see two cases in particular and where it could be a problem for people. Number one is because it's a remake of existing games. If they choose to put anything that existed previously in Tony Hawk 1 and 2 behind a paywall for content, then people are going to be pissed about that because it's something that they believe should be part of the game by default. Mm. The second case is if there's any sort of competitive mode and there's any sort of pay-to-win content in there that actually gives you an edge in that online competitive mode. Now, I don't know if the original games did. I suspect they didn't because, you know, they're not from the era of online gaming, are they? There's going to be some online stuff in this one, I think. They did mention there was going to be some stuff, so I don't know. If you have to pay extra to have, like, you know, fast moving trucks or super duper, you know, wheels or whatever. I mean, I don't know any of the skating shit.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, this is a bit.
I've referred to it before as riding the skateboard, and it's not, you skate a skateboard.
No, I played the old games. I fucking loved them. But yeah, they're old games. They were way before the time of sort of customizing to change your stats in the game. It's purely aesthetics. Like, it's just, you know, you'll be able to choose what deck you want on your skateboard and what color wheels you want. It's as basic as that. But yeah, I agree with you. If they implement modern day sort of gameplay mechanics into it where they do have stats affecting what you know, what makes up your skateboard, and they have a paywall behind that would be fucking dog shit.
Yeah. Music's the other interesting one too. Like, if they want to add new music to the game, then they've got to pay for that somehow. So if they want to increase the catalogue of music, then, you know, charge for it. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think that's fine.
I think that's a great way to...
it's a good enough soundtrack at launch.
I think that's a great way to honour artists. I mean, like, you know, if you've got good playlists and things and you want to actually get people's names out there, a few more garage bands, you know, that'd be pretty great.
100%.
Well, moving on from one remake to a game that was remade from consoles and PC onto mobile, just without the permission of the developers. And Ubisoft is now suing a developer for a mobile carbon copy. This article comes out of Polygon, as written by Cass Marshall and Nicole Carpenter. This one's a bit of a long one, so settle in, fellas. Area F2, a mobile first-person shooter that raised eyebrows across the gaming community with its strong similarities to Ubisoft's Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege, has been delisted from the Apple App Store and Google Play Store following a copyright infringement lawsuit from Ubisoft. Ejoy, the Hong Kong-based developer of Area F2, took the game servers offline on Wednesday, but the company made no mention of the suit in a post on the game's website explaining the shutdown, saying only that it was carrying out improvements to Area F2 in order to deliver a better experience to players. In the legal complaint, which Ubisoft filed on May 15th in the US District Court for the Central District of California, Ubisoft described Area F2 as a near carbon copy of Rainbow Six Siege. The publisher also listed Apple and Google in the lawsuits for hosting the game on its platforms. A Ubisoft representative told Polygon it named Google and Apple in the court documents because neither company took the necessary action to remove the game from the stores, even when formally requested to do so. Ubisoft's teams have poured years of creativity, resources, and talent into making Rainbow Six Siege the success that it is today, and we are committed to protecting our intellectual property, Ubisoft said in a statement to Polygon, referring to Area F2 as a game that severely infringes upon our copyright. Now that Area F2 servers are offline, players that open the app are met with the following notice: server is closed, see announcement for details. Ejoy said in a separate post on Area F2's website that players have purchased items in the game can apply for refunds on their respective platforms, with customer service available until June 20. Even while playing through the Area F2 tutorial ahead of its shutdown, Polygon noticed obvious similarities between it and Rainbow Six Siege. As an attacker, we breached a wall with explosives. As a defender, we could apply defensive bracing. Area F2 also has characters like Mike Hammer Coleman, who has a hammer that he can use to knock down walls, and Ivan Spitfire Voronin, who deploys a ballistic shield attached to a machine gun to provide heavy fire. Keen fans of Rainbow Six Siege may recognize these characters as having the same abilities as operators Sledge and Tachanka. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Area F2 looks and feels very much like a mobile version of Rainbow Six Siege, from the loading UI to the game itself. YouTube commentators have already remarked on these similarities. Ubisoft alleged in its lawsuit that virtually every aspect of AF2 is copied from Rainbow Six Siege, from the operator screen to the final scoring screen and everything in between. Ubisoft also said in the complaint that Area F2 had been downloaded more than a million times. In addition, the company alleged that developer Ejoy, owned by Alibaba, generated tens of thousands of dollars in revenue from the game. So I know that was a bit of a meaty story there, but I found that one to be an interesting one. And I went, before we started recording, I went and had a quick look at some gameplay for this Area F2 game. And my dear God, it is a shameless ripoff. You can throw down like UAVs or something like that, and they're basically just drones with cameras on them, just like what you can do in Rainbow Six Siege. Even the menus and stuff look almost exactly the same. It is absolute insanity. Dear God. Have you checked out any footage of Area F2 at all, Luke? Have you seen this one?
I don't feel like I have to, following that description. Yeah. I think it's pretty clear what's going on. It's happened with Fortnite. It's happened with PUBG. It's happened with, you know, every other big game in between. You know, it'll continue happening, you know. So companies like Ubisoft are not new to this. They need to vigorously protect their copyrights, because if they don't, then that's where, you know, legally companies can take advantage of those loopholes. So, you know, what one of the steps in protecting your IP is that you have to do it consistently. You can't sort of ease off on that, because otherwise that gets through as a bit of a precedent in future when someone actually does have a real case on their hands. So yeah, you just got to do it. It's one of those unfortunate legal costs of being a big publisher. So
yeah, oh totally. And this is a fair case as well too. I completely understand why they would be bringing legal action. Like, you can, there's some out there where you can see where they've at least tried to differentiate in some ways, but this really was just, they just really just,
it's funny about the Apple and Google Play Store as well. I mean, getting a game on the Apple Store in particular, they have a lot more steps and vetting compared to a lot of other store marketplaces, and even then they're not that rigid. But compare them to something like Steam, for instance. You know, this could have happened anywhere, so they just simply don't have the manpower to, you know, spend playing through these games and comparing them to any other possible examples where there could be infringing material. So, you know, the fact that they didn't act quickly enough, I think, is the issue, not the fact that they let it through in the first place, because it's always going to get through.
How about you, Lockie? Do you think Ubisoft is well within their rights to be going after Area
I think
here?
I think that's absolutely fine, but I'm starting to. I think the bigger issue here is that there seems to be some sort of a cartel around fraud companies trying to steal gaming content and passing it off as their own. Why do they always have ridiculous names? And if they do, wouldn't it be very easy to identify that as one of the mediums like Google Play?
Easy to identify because they've got a different name?
Ridiculous? Or? No, because they have ridiculous names like eJoy, Alibaba. Who would fucking name their companies that?
Alibaba is absolutely huge. That's a mammoth company. But I don't know. I think eJoy is actually kind of ingenious because they've just got the word enjoy, you know, so it already has positive connotations to it, and just drop the N and now it sounds like a tech word, eJoy. So I think it's a perfect sort of tech company name. Especially one that's just going to rip people off as well too, because it's not very creative and they're obviously not a very creative company.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely on that. Although I think Alibaba is pretty creative, but it's just they're fucking ridiculous sounding names. Like,
I think eJoy sounds like the name of a company that would readily supply large quantities of inflatable fans to football teams. So
yes, I'll have to double check, make sure my subscription to eJoy is still up to date. I don't want to. You can't miss a single sex doll.
You should probably pull out stocks if you do have stocks in eJoy at the moment, because they're yep, going to have to be paying a lot of legal fees.
Lockie's right. Yes. If you've been messing with eJoy, you got to pull out for sure. Absolutely.
All right. Look, there's clearly not much to say on this story, other than that, yeah, good on him for going after him. It obviously makes sense. Something that is a bit more to talk about with, I guess, something a bit more juice to this story. Denuvo has come in and out of Doom Eternal over the last couple of weeks. Oh, I'm so glad I phrased it that way. Eurogamer wrote this article, and it was written by Emma Kent. Anti-cheat software has been a particularly prickly issue of late, and the latest kerfuffle over the introduction of Denuvo anti-cheat to Doom Eternal has been no exception. After Update 1 rolled out on 15th of May, fans expressed unhappiness that Denuvo's anti-cheat software, not the same as anti-tamper, was being implemented on the PC version as part of the patch. In particular, concerns were raised that Denuvo's software was too intrusive, as it uses a kernel-level driver, while some players attributed performance issues to the addition of the anti-cheat software. And of course, this was all being added after many players had already purchased the game with no ability to opt out. To address the controversy, Doom Eternal executive producer Marty Stratton posted a statement to Reddit explaining the anti-cheat software would be removed as part of the next patch, but defended the team's reasons for implementing it. Despite our best intentions, feedback from players have made it clear that we must reevaluate our approach to anti-cheat integration, Stratton wrote. With that, we will be removing the anti-cheat technology from the game in our next PC update. Stratton explained the decision was motivated by a need to implement anti-cheat before the introduction of more competitive play to Doom Eternal, adding that kernel-level integrations are typically the most effective in preventing cheating, and that Denuvo software met their security standards. Doom 2016 came under fire for being slow to implement anti-cheat measures, which Stratton said it was a motivating factor for the swift introduction of anti-cheat to Doom Eternal. It's also worth noting that our decision to remove the anti-cheat software is not based on the quality of Denuvo anti-cheat solution, Stratton added, explaining that recent crashes had been related to customizable skins, while the performance issues had been caused by a code change around VRAM allocation. Many have unfortunately related the performance and stability issues introduced to Update 1 to the introduction of anti-cheat. They are not related. Now, I have no idea why the entire time when I was reading that article, I kept switching between saying anti-cheat and anti-cheat. It just felt weird every time I said it. But anyway, the thing I find super weird about this is that they said that it has nothing to do with Denuvo, yet they're still going to be removing Denuvo in the next patch and apologizing for it. Luke, can you make any sense of this for me, please?
Fucking Denuvo. My God. Okay. So let me break this down for you, because this is a consistent theme with what we've been talking about tonight with regarding setting expectations when it comes to games. So Doom Eternal is a really interesting case. Like, personally, I Doom Eternal is one of my favorite games in the last decade, for sure. Like, I love the shit out of Doom 2016 and Eternal. Both amazing games. Problem is that the launch of Eternal, since the launch, things have not been particularly smooth. There's been a lot of things that have not really met the expectations of consumers. One significant one being the lack of one of their advertised game modes, which is the invasion mode that they talked heaps about sort of in the lead up to launch, which is the ability to kind of jump into someone else's campaign game as a demon and basically mess with the Slayer and do all that sort of stuff. So people are a bit sort of salty about the fact that that being an advertised initial feature is not part of the game yet, like over a month post-launch, which seems weird. And I mean, obviously,
I totally forgot they spoke about that. That's insane.
I think there's a little bit of sort of forgiveness in the air at the moment, given that we've got this global pandemic situation on and things might be taking a little bit longer than they otherwise would. But even so, communication is the key. You still got to, you know, be pretty transparent about why these things aren't coming in when they're projected to come and so on and so forth. And that would have been something that you'd expect on launch, if not immediately afterwards. So the multiplayer stuff that they've been ramping up is another one of these sorts of situations where it's not something that really anybody was particularly asking for. Like, people have enjoyed the sort of multiplayer PvP stuff in Doom Eternal, and I don't think there was any huge call for like a massive upgrade of that to a sort of a competitive level anytime soon. So the question arises about why are they focusing on this instead of the stuff that should have been in the core game. But when you add Denuvo into the mix, that's a whole other level of complication, because Denuvo is an interesting case. Like, a lot of people associate it with DRM, and it's not technically digital rights management in this case, because what it's seeking to do is do the anti-cheat function. It's not about, the issue a lot of people have with DRM is it forces you to play games that would otherwise be available to play offline, online. But Doom Eternal's always been an online game. Like, there's functionality in the game that requires you to be online, and it makes sense. And they set the expectation correctly in that they, you know, people who play this single-player campaign expect that they need to be online for some of this stuff. But where it is a problem is the invasive nature of that software. So people have massive problems with Denuvo. It's got a really bad rap. Part of the reason for that is because even though it apparently avoids collecting any personal identifiable information, so it doesn't scan your files, it doesn't take screenshots, it doesn't stream shellcode or any of that kind of stuff, but there's a lot of concerns people have about it providing a potential backdoor into your system through the link to the kernel mode driver that it installs for you. And it's always running. So it runs whenever the game launches. You can't opt in and out of it. You know, it's always there. And people are concerned about that. There's a lot of antivirus software that actually sort of throws up alerts whenever you've got a game running Denuvo, and people get very nervous about that, because when your antivirus software tells you that you're running something that has, you know, some sort of Trojanware in it, then concerns a lot of people. But I think the issue here is that it just didn't communicate it. They didn't sort of say to people who were buying the game, hey, we're going to be installing Denuvo at a later date. And there's a lot of people out there, for them, that any game containing Denuvo is an automatic won't buy for them because of that fact. So if they've gone out and spent money on Doom Eternal already and then this has been installed after the fact, then they've got a right to be pissed off about it. I completely empathize with that. So I think that they really fucked up when it came to the messaging around this. And it's not so much that Denuvo is absolutely bad. It's that it's got a trash reputation and people weren't expecting it. And you can't opt out of it. So people who own Doom Eternal at the moment, if they want to play the game, they have to use Denuvo. So yeah, they're rightfully so walking that back. I don't think they're walking it back because of any technical reason. I think they're walking it back because they know they fucked up when it came to the communication and they need to save some face about it, which is... You know, obviously it's damage control, but it's absolutely the right move. I think it's the only way they can go at this point. So
yeah, no, it's definitely a smart decision. I don't understand why they've tried to make it sound like Denuvo had nothing to do with these issues. Like it just makes no sense that they'd take it out if it had nothing to do with their.
From a technical perspective, I don't think it does. Like I think that it's probably accurate that it hasn't resulted in any slowdown or anything like that. It's entirely down to the fact that people haven't expected it and they shouldn't be forced to use it if they don't want to. So
dang, yeah, so it got absolutely review bombed on Steam, just into the absolute dirt. Do you think it deserved a review bomb, Lockie?
I don't know how much of it in reality Denuvo is actually causing a load on your system, whether it's really going to slow down your game in any sense. I think you're right before, Luke, about the digital rights management side of things, because that game got cracked within days of it coming out.
It's a bit late for that sort of stuff now.
So it's just a big question mark in my mind, because if it was full Denuvo, it wouldn't have been cracked so quickly. So, you know, it probably is some Denuvo light version of the anti-cheat software that they would normally run for other games of the like when they are doing the proper DRM. So it probably doesn't affect you in that way. But yeah, I think it's more people have been screwed over by Denuvo in the past in other games, and they're expecting that to fuck them over in this way. So yeah, I can understand why people are pissed, but whether or not it's valid, who fucking knows?
It's also very fresh in people's minds because of the recent controversy around Riot's Valorant as well, because that was another game that required that that kernel level sort of Denuvo installed with the game as well, and a lot of people deliberately avoided that game because of it. So
Which really sucks because, yeah, as you were mentioning before, Doom Eternal is an absolutely stellar title, and it sucks that it's had all these different controversies around it, from the tiff between ID Software and the composer Mick Gordon a few weeks ago to now this. It just really sucks, and for it to get review bombed, look, I understand, because, you know, people who've bought the game don't really have any other sort of outlet or ability to, you know, to sort of speak up and have an effect to make something like this happen. So I understand why people do review bomb, but it just sucks because, yeah, hopefully it's not going to sour people's opinions on this game if they go to look at it. Hopefully they can see past the timely review bomb and hopefully, yeah, find the fantastic game that's there, because my God, what a game. Absolutely.
Wait till the next patch when it's removed, and then buy it if you haven't already, because it's still absolutely awesome. Yeah.
Yep. Totally endorse that advice. Now, moving on to some quick stories. I did not cover this one in the show last week. I missed this one on the show. Now, this we covered in a Somebody's Leaking a few weeks back. It was there was rumors about a Paper Mario announcement coming soon, and that was announced last week. This article comes out of Press Start and was written by Shannon Grixty. Nintendo has just stealth dropped an announcement for a brand new Paper Mario game. It's called Paper Mario The Origami King, and it's coming to Nintendo Switch on July 17th. The game sees Mario and a brand new partner called Olivia as they team up with unlikely characters such as Bowser and the Toads to battle evil folded soldiers. In the game, Mario has a 1,000-fold arm ability, which allows him to solve puzzles as well as in battle. The game will feature a new dynamic combat system, but it appears as though it will be turn-based, just like previous Paper Mario games. Now, I've never played a Paper Mario game before, but I've found the trailer to be super, super cute and the art style to be absolutely stunning. I just don't know if I'm down to play another turn-based RPG right now. I think I'm a little bit burned out at the moment. Have you played Paper Mario before, Lockie? Does this get you excited at all?
Yeah, I've played a lot of the Paper Marios. Look, the only one I really liked, it wasn't even a Paper Mario, but I'm going to count it anyway because it was a turn-based RPG in the Mario world, and that was the one that was done by Square Enix for the Super Nintendo. That game was fucking awesome as a kid. Playing it now, and once you have played a couple of turn-based RPGs, you start getting really sick of the really basic ones. Like, you need a little bit more meat on the bone, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be a good gateway game for new gamers, young gamers, with Nintendo, which is obviously their target audience, but I'm not particularly excited because I don't think it'll be anything complex, so I'll probably give this one a miss.
Yeah, totally. My excitement on this is absolutely paper thin. How about you, Luke? Do you think you're going to be picking up Paper Mario when it comes out?
Well,
July 17th.
I'll raise you that paper thin excitement and say that mine is definitely going to be increased. My kids will love it. That's all I'm going to say. Like I think I bought it for them. Okay. I'll buy it for them and I'll steal their copy and I'll play a little bit. And if it's intriguing, I'll stick with it. But I mean, it looks like stacks of fun to me. I think the Mario RPG that was out in way, way early console days, this is kind of what it's pivoted to now. So Paper Mario is kind of like the new Super Mario RPG. Well, I say new, it's not really new at all. But I watched that trailer today for the first time and I loved it. I thought it looked really cool. I don't know if it's strictly turn-based though. Like there seem to be quite a few bits in there that weren't necessarily turn-based. It's a really interesting blend. I like RPGs like this that they mix their formula up a lot. Like, there seem to be a lot of different sort of almost mini games in terms of how you interact with it the whole way through. No sort of clip looked the same as like the next 10 seconds after the next 10 seconds. It all looked very dynamic. So I think it looks fun. I could be down for that.
Yeah, totally. It never ceases to amaze me what Nintendo can do graphically just by like playing around with their art styles. Like, they come up with these really great looking games like this and then Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey. When they don't have all the power there that PlayStation and Xbox has to play around with, they're fantastic developers. They really are.
It's coming out real soon too. It's like a month and a half away. So the dev team behind that at the moment must be flat out.
Yeah, absolutely insane. Now that's I think a lot of people would be really excited to hear that it's coming so soon. I've been enjoying some of these quicker turnarounds with developers dropping games and announcing them that we've had sometimes lately. But look, let's turn over a new page and I'll start talking about the Sony CEO, Kenichiro Yoshida, speaking as part of a statement about corporate strategy. According to Bloomberg's Takashi Mochizuki, stated that they will soon be announcing a strong lineup of PS5 games. So hopefully we'll be seeing in the next couple of months, we've been waiting for a while, hopefully we'll start seeing finally what we're going to be getting as launch titles on the PS5. I'm not getting too excited at the moment. I'm sort of expecting a lot of third-party games here. I can't imagine things like Horizon are ready for launch and things like God of War 2 and the next Spider-Man. I imagine they're still going to be a few years away. But it's just good to know. We could have some games to talk about. Coming up real soon, Borderlands 3 is getting a Western-themed expansion coming at June 25. So I know people who have Borderlands 3, if you've been playing the expansions, look forward to that. That's it for our news. We now have the games that came out this week. So this week we had the wonderful 101 remaster came to PS4, Nintendo Switch, and PC. We had Gorn come to PS4. And Gorn, fantastic title, no idea what that is. Total Tank Simulator came to PC on May 20th. Crucible came to PC. What the Golf came to Nintendo Switch. Saints Row the Third Remaster came to PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And finally, Man Eater was released on Friday. That came to PS4, Xbox One, PC, and Nintendo Switch. Was there any of those titles there that stood out to any of you?
What the Golf is great. You should play What the Golf. Can recommend. Highly recommend.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Oh, is that one? It's like a wacky multiplayer golf game.
Yeah. That's the one.
And it's like all you can pick, like all these, like they have like different golf balls, like they'll be like cone shaped and acorn shaped and stuff like that.
Every level mixes up the formula a bit. It's really fun. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that's definitely one I may check out. I also want to check out, Moving Out, another good multiplayer game that I haven't checked out yet.
I want to know if Maneater has the Nelly Furtado song in it. That's what I want to know. And if it doesn't, I'm not interested.
Was that Nelly Furtado, the one that goes, it's a Maneater? Is that her?
I think so. Yeah, that's really dredging up the memory banks, but I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah.
Was that in the trailer? Because if that wasn't in the trailer, that was a massive missed opportunity.
I don't know.
I really hope they had that song playing, because every time I start playing that game, that song pops into my head.
I don't know what she's doing these days. Surely she could do with the money. I'm not sure.
not hearing much about Nelly Furtado these days.
Ouch. After that shots have been fired, Nelly Furtado. We need you to respond immediately.
Yeah, I think we'll be hearing about this on E! News Weekly next week. Shots fired at Nelly Furtado. But look, let's leave it there for now. We'll have a quick break and then we'll jump back in with what we have been playing. To kick off our impressions, I'll throw over to our gracious guest, Luke. What have you been playing this week, my friend?
This week has been... I'll focus on the last 48 hours in particular, because I've sunk a shit ton of time into Persona 5 Royal this last few days. So I actually started playing it about a month ago, and I deliberately picked up Royal after not getting Persona 5 on release. We actually were sent a review copy to chat about on the show when it first came out, and I passed that off onto one of the other people on the team and never played it myself. But I regretted it because it sounded amazing, and I was just like, man, I really need to play this game, but I also need to think seriously about when I'm going to be able to commit to like 100 plus hours of gameplay, because that's how long this thing is. And Royal, even though I'm not up there yet, apparently is about 120 plus, so it's even longer. Jesus. They've added a lot of shit. Yeah.
Ooh.
So I did a bunch of research sort of leading up to its release to sort of work out what was different about the two. And it turns out a lot. Like, it turns out they added a lot of content. The way that the game works is on sort of school semesters or trimesters. I'm going to mess it up because whatever the Japanese school system is. And in the Royal version, which is basically like the... for anyone who's a Persona fan, they did a similar thing with Persona 4 where they had like a version called Persona 4 Golden, which is kind of like a deluxe version. They added extra game to it, you know, new characters, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Many people preach as being the best game on PS Vita.
Yeah, well, too, I've heard that too. And I will need to hunt down a copy of that game and play it now, because this is my very first Persona or Shin Megami Tensei. I think I'll probably mess that up. Game from that entire series. Yeah. And I knew I'd like it because I've always sort of enjoyed a good JRPG, and I am generally a pretty big fan of that kind of setting as well. A huge fan of the Yakuza series, which is a bit different in terms of gameplay, but again, sort of, you know, a lot of Japanese kind of themes running throughout that with regards to the culture and the people and the characters. But I won't sugarcoat it any further to say that this game is fucking awesome. It's so good. And I'm about 60 hours in so far, and I've just in the last 20 hours or so hit some points of the game where I just literally, it's like a good book. I cannot put this thing down at the moment. And it hasn't taken me 40 hours to get there. Like, I was there very, very early on, but just in particular, the last 20 hours or so have just been mind-blowingly good. So I'm not going to lie. As soon as we finish tonight, I'll be firing that thing right back up and playing again, probably into the wee hours. Yeah. But they've added an entire additional semester onto the game in terms of the time you spend in your school year, which to me I think equates to probably about an extra 20% of game content, which I think there's... And this is what I was going to mention to you before, Zach, because you sort of said to me off air that you just picked up Persona 5 and you got original Persona 5 instead of Royal. Mm-hmm. If I were you, knowing what I know now about the differences between the two, and that's not just in terms of the extra content, it's other things as well, I would take that shit back and pick up Royal. I really would. Because if you're going to spend the amount of time playing this game as it takes, you want to play the best version of this game. So that is my advice to you, my friend.
That really hurts me, because I bought this game digitally, so I cannot possibly return it. But I got to say, so far, I picked this up because, like you, I thought it's just a game I've been wanting to pick up for a while. Unlike you, it's not normally my kind of game. I'm not a massive JRPG person. I just sort of never found many, I guess, sort of as I was growing up and with the limited amount of games I could get access to. I've never played any that I enjoyed, but as far as recently, I've started sinking my teeth a little bit into it, like Final Fantasy VII Remake. I played Nier Automata a couple of years ago. So starting to give that stuff a bit more of a crack. I played Final Fantasy XV as well too, but so far I got to say Nier Automata I enjoyed, but nothing else has really grabbed me. And I've played, I think about 10-15 hours into Persona 5, and I'll say so far, look, I'm really enjoying it. I've got some problems with it. Like to start the first 4 or 5 hours, it takes a while to actually get into what the game is. And
the first 10 hours is tutorial. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But once you get past that stage and it's a lot more, getting to choose what you're doing with your days, I was like, oh wow. Yeah. I can see how people, get hooked on this. The only issue I sort of had with it, I guess, was the dungeon system. I find the turn-based gameplay actually really engaging. They got interesting mechanics in there. The characters' animations are all interesting. I love the look of the menu systems. Like, the art style in this game is absolutely ridiculous. It is just absolutely dripping with style throughout the entire thing. And the music, oh my God, the music's absolutely incredible. Absolutely adore the music. But I just found that after a while of trying to get through a dungeon, I did start to find it a little bit repetitive. And I got to a point where I was getting closer towards the end, or like just past the halfway point of the first dungeon that you do, or the first palace that you enter, I think they're called. Or something like that. I always think of the Mind Palace from Sherlock Holmes.
That's exactly what it is, though. They're all mind palaces.
It is 100% that, and that aspect of it as well too. Oh fuck, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's really, really fascinating. But yeah, I was about an hour or two into this section after beating a boss and all that, and then I accidentally jumped down to a section with an enemy right there that was leveled far above me that there was no way I was going to be able to defeat, and if I didn't accidentally jump down there, I wouldn't have faced, and that sent me right back 2 hours beforehand having to fight that boss and all that stuff all over again. And at that point, I was like, nah. You know, I had, like, Final Fantasy VII, towards the end, I started getting really sick of that one, and I was just like, yeah, I can't be bothered to play through this again right now. That being said, I'm not done with the game. I'm definitely going to power through and keep playing, but these little issues for me, I do find them to be a bit of an annoyance, but my God, the story is absolutely fascinating, and that art style, my God, I want to keep playing, let alone just for that. So I'm definitely going to be playing some more Persona 5 in the future. Have you played any of the Persona games, Lockie?
No, I haven't, and honestly, it's sounding fucking amazing, and I'm wondering why I haven't. What platforms are these on?
This is right up your alley. This is Lockie written all over it.
Yeah, the reason why you possibly haven't is because it's a 100-plus-hour commitment.
No, I'll fucking take that on. That sounds amazing. I'm keen. Is it on Switch?
I don't think so.
I haven't picked it up.
The meatiest JRPG on Switch, I think, is Three Houses. So
Three Houses, which it's a JRPG sort of, but it's mostly a dating simulator.
Yeah.
it tricks you. It's a good one. It's a very high quality one. One of the best ever. It's funny how it sort of tricks you into playing a dating simulator part of the game.
I'm not going to lie. There is a tiny bit of that in Persona as well, but only a tiny bit.
Oh, totally.
But that's the best type. That's the best type of dating sim where it's not the full game, but, you know, they just pepper it in.
Yeah, absolutely. So
that's one of the cleverest things that they've done, really, with Persona. And I know it's like anyone who's a Persona fan, this is nothing new to them, but how the relationships that you build with characters comes into play when it comes to combat. So by building your relationship with characters, you will unlock new abilities and whatnot to help you throughout all these dungeons that you'll be running through. So, it's really fascinating. Lockie, I'd definitely consider picking up Royale, and I'm kind of regretting just getting the base version and not getting Royale. Well, now, it's one of those things where
unless you actually know the differences, and you know you don't have to go out and research that by any stretch, you could just remain blissfully unaware of what you're missing out on. I don't think it'll make the game lesser for you. It'd be fine.
Yeah, I'm already loving it so far. I feel like it's for a lot of people it was their game of the year, and back in 2017 I believe it was in the running for game of the year at the Game Awards and whatnot. So
I think it'll be pretty high for me too, and I'm not even halfway through. So
Awesome. Okay, nice. And now that's an interesting discussion, I guess, in itself. A re-release of a game with a bit of extra content, should that be included in Game of the Year discussions? I think, why the fuck not? Who cares if it's a good, if people like the game enough and they think it's worthy of being there, why not? But
it's a tough discussion when we've got these games as a service that are often in those conversations as well. So
What I think Fortnite was up for it before it was even actually released or something. Was that PUBG maybe? I'm not sure.
PUBG was an interesting one because of the early access kind of dating on it. There was a game that was definitely in that conversation that was very controversial, which I can't actually remember what it was at the moment, but Fortnite technically could be considered in that manner too, because Fortnite Save the World came out a lot earlier than Fortnite Battle Royale. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, no, fair call. Now, something that we do here is we just, like, for a bit of fun, like, we don't take it too seriously, is put a review score on games that we've played. It's up to you. I like to wait till I've finished a game, till I've seen credits roll to do it. Lockie doesn't give a shit. If you'd like to put a review score on Persona 5 Royale, you're more than welcome. If not, yeah. Do you want to put a review score on it?
At the moment, I'll give it 9.5 severed heads out of a set of gallows. There we go. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Nice.
Do you get that reference, Zach?
I do not at all. Do you? What do you, Lockie?
You haven't played enough of the game yet, then.
Fuck.
I haven't played it. Of course I'm not going to get the reference. What are you asking me for?
You just sound, I don't know. You sound like oh, God. Anyway, I want to talk about a game that just came out. Just this little old Friday, I purchased it on the PlayStation Store because I cannot buy games physically right now because my PS4 Pro is broken and my original PS4 melts discs.
Oh, dude.
As I've discussed on the show before. Oh, and just a bit of an update for those of you that care. I know no one does, but I'll quickly mention, I've put it in for repair. They're taking repairs over at my local EB, so thank fuck I'm going to get my PS4 Pro back. Anyway, I'll stop with this this vanity story.
Zach, that really should have been in the news section.
It really should have. I know. Sorry, I'll have to call Jim Ryan to find out what he thinks about my PS4 Pro breaking down after just a year and a half. Jim Ryan, what the fuck, mate? Anyway, my God, Maneater came out on Friday, and it was a game developed by Tripwire Interactive. And I gotta say, first off, I should probably describe what this is, because, you know, the game title does not probably give you a lot of detail. This is a game where you play as a shark. It's a shark PG, alright? You're playing as a shark, you're swimming through these lovely little open level water environments, and you're eating fish until you can build up and eat bigger fish. And I know this sounds really boring the way I'm describing this right now, but my God, I'm having a lot of fun with Maneater at the moment. Now, look, it's not a perfect game. I've got my issues with it, which I'll get into later on down the track. But starting off with what I absolutely love with the game, the playing as a shark is not, don't expect any crazy physics or anything like that. I don't believe it is a AAA budgeted game, but the shark feels good to swim around through the water and munch on fish and whatnot. And the controls for the most part worked really well. One of the things I particularly love about the game is the way they've chosen to do the story is part of a reality TV show that's playing, and the reality show is narrated by none other than the great Chris Parnell, who voices Jerry on Rick and Morty. And my God, his dry quips and whatnot and narration in the game is consistently entertaining, and he is in the game a lot. You know, you find items in the game and you get a funny little quip from Chris Parnell or some weird shark fact or something like that. And yeah, it's a great sort of way to give you some kind of connection to this world that you're swimming around, munching up all these fish and whatnot in. And a fun sort of little narrative to go along with it. And it's ridiculous, as it should be, because it's a game where you're playing as a shark that you are leveling up. But, my God, I'm having so much fun with that at the moment. But getting on to the things that are sort of the little issues I have with it, you will see a fair few frame rate drops. It doesn't run the smoothest, which, sometimes it can, cause a little bit of trouble when you're trying to fight some of the trickier fish and whatnot. And that brings me to the next thing, and that's the Shark Souls element. They've gone for the sort of the game style where you'll come across some things that you are not meant to fight yet, and will kill you very, very quickly. And you can sort of do a bit of grinding to build up and fight those things. But you may find yourself going all the way back to your little shark checkpoint to come back and fight some enemies a fair few times before you finally get the kill in there, which, look, for some people might find annoying. I haven't found it too annoying so far. It's not as difficult as your Dark Souls or your Bloodborne's or anything like that, but yeah, so far I'm having a lot of fun with Maneater. Has this been one that's been on your radar at all, Luke?
I am interested in checking it out. I don't know if I'd be really sort of sinking my teeth into it per se, but I might have a little bit of a play. It does look intriguing to do a stream on it or something like that.
Well, it isn't a full priced game. Like, I picked it up for $55 on the PlayStation Store. I believe it's going for $60 physically in most stores in Australia. So it's not going to set you back a massive amount. But yeah, look, it's not one that I'm going to be like, yeah, everyone needs to play this. But if this sounds fun and intriguing to you, this might be something that you would have a bit of fun with. But I'm still pretty early in, I guess. I'm probably about a third or almost close to halfway through. But I guess, you know, at this point, I think I know what I'm getting. I've got a shark RPG. I know what it's going to be for the rest of it.
I was just going to say, I did see some complaints when I was reading about it today that apparently it was a bit content light in terms of some of the repetitive nature of it. Was that your experience, or?
Yeah, well, look, so it is one of those kinds of games where they kind of put you in an open level and just give you a bunch of things to do. And yeah, some of those things are certainly repetitive. I find that they do introduce a new stuff, and you can move along at a decent enough pace that it's not too bad. I don't know if when it starts getting more into the end game, though, where you have some larger things to fight and whatnot, if it's going to get super grindy, and I will have to be doing the same things over and over again. But yeah, so far they've introduced a new sort of elements as you get to each sort of open level. But for the most part, yeah, I guess you are doing essentially sort of this same thing. But yeah, so don't expect any kind of earth-shattering gameplay revelations in this game. That's for sure. It is. It certainly is exactly what it says on the box. It's just a game where you play as a shark and you get to cause a bunch of havoc. And yeah, no, it's a lot of fun, I guess, if you know what your expectations are, which has been a little bit of a theme for this episode, I guess. Mm-hmm. Have you got any expectations for this game at all, Lockie? Do you think you may pick it up, or is this one that you'll let swim by?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Okay. Well, you kind of lost me then. But no, in the pitch, you said Shark Souls, and that had me really intrigued. How much like Dark Souls is this?
Okay, so you're dodging and you're looking for the opportunities to attack and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
The camera is also a pain in the ass sometimes.
Just like Dark Souls?
Dark Souls. So, I think Shark Souls is... I wouldn't say it's as I said it before, it's not as hardcore as your Bloodborne and whatnot. It's not going to have you throwing your controller. But, yeah, you will be fighting some of the bigger fishies over and over again, and you'll be like learning their attack patterns and whatnot, and you know, having more luck the next time you fight them and whatnot. So yeah, there's definitely an element of that. So I could see this for me, I think, is going to be a great podcast game, you know what I mean? Where I play this game, you know, once I've already finished it and I'm just doing like collectibles and just the repetitive crap, and I just listen to a podcast or something like that, or put on some YouTube videos to watch in the background. It's not one of those ones that it's going to be like demanding your full attention.
Put on a Nelly film clip. Put on a Nelly film clip.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to some Nelly Furtado. I hope it makes an appearance at least in the game if they did not use it for the trailer. But yeah, no, it's, I'm enjoying my experience with Man Eater so far. I would definitely, if it sounds interesting to you, I know, maybe watch some gameplay and whatnot, just be aware of those few frame rate issues and stuff like that. And maybe, yeah, it is a bit repetitive, but, if it sounds interesting to you, maybe check it out. There's not a whole lot at the moment coming out in between now and, The Last of Us Part Two, at least stuff that I'm excited about. Personally.
I was going to say, that is a lie, good sir. There is 2 days away until we get graced with Minecraft Dungeons, and I cannot freaking wait.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot. Is that one that you're eagerly anticipating?
Look, I am actually legitimately excited about that game. So,
Nice. I've heard sort of mixed things, I guess it's not out yet, you know, so people haven't really got their full opinions out there, but I've heard it's a very, very basic ass dungeon.
I have played it. It was at PAX last year. It is basically Minecraft Diablo, and if you are into that, then you will love it because it is freaking great.
Oh, okay, that sounds pretty good. Yeah.
I'm not a top-down dungeon crawler fan. I tried Diablo 3, wasn't my cup of tea, unfortunately for me. But yeah, I can see, definitely understand why people would be excited for a Minecraft Diablo. Oh,
perfect 100%. Multiplayer streaming game as well. So we're definitely going to do some stuff on that, I think. Yep.
Oh, okay, nice. It's got online co-op, I'm imagining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. No, what, four people?
Yeah, pretty sure it's four. And on Switch as well. So there you go. If you've got a melty PS4.
Yeah,
actually, that sounds like it could be a half-decent Switch game. I wonder if they'd have cross-play on that one, because that could be interesting.
Switch to console. I'm not sure. I'll have to check that, but
Yeah. Okay. Well, Lockie, I know you've been playing some stuff this week.
I have.
What the fuck is it that you've been playing?
I've been playing Civ 6 non-stop this week, and this is before the DLC came out a couple of days ago on the Switch.
Oh, wow, okay.
So that was just a nice little surprise by the end of the week to hop into Civ 6, you know, on my fourth consecutive day non-stop playing it and having this brand new wave of DLC being promised to me. If anyone already has a copy of Civ 6, which it's been out for quite a long time at this point, they have a new Frontier Pass, which basically promises over the next year, every 2 months, there'll be new DLC, which will be related to all sorts of different goodies. It's a little bit of a mixed bag every time, but it promises at least one civilization and a couple of other things with each pack.
So hang on, Lockie, you were saying just then that you were already playing Civ 6 at the start of the week just because you wanted to play it, and without being aware that this update was going to be coming, and then all of a sudden you've had this DLC. I can't imagine a greater thing to happen. You're just getting into a game and all of a sudden you have a big content drop to sink your teeth.
I can tell you what's an even better thing to have happen. You get all your friends into the same game because it actually appears for free on the Epic Games Store on the same week. So,
yes. Are you referring to GTA 5 there, perhaps?
No, Civ 6 is free right now on the Apple Store.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yep. So I don't know when this episode is going out, so this might not be relevant to listeners at the point that they catch this. But, Zach, you can right now, as of this moment, go on and get that game for free.
Okay, nice. Far out. Oh, damn. I need to get a gaming laptop so I can start playing games on PC. My dear God.
Oh, I'm playing it on Switch.
Burn on console at this point.
I have it on PC, and I played it on PC first years ago. But when I actually got it as a Christmas gift from someone a year back on the Switch, and I gotta say, it's way more fun to play on the Switch than it is on the PC. I don't know what it is. I'm taking a huge dip in graphics, obviously, and it stutters like crazy, drops out all the time. It has really bad issues with the game crashing. Like, you'll get a game crash every couple of hours. It's that bad. But still, it's preferable to PC.
Why?
I'm intrigued by this too.
Why are you still playing?
I don't know. I've played PC games.
I played PC games my entire fucking life since I was like fucking five. And like, I love top down games. I love strategy games and I played them all on PC. But this particular game, it's just more fun to play with a Switch, with controllers that you can lie down on a couch, not have your arms like, you know, hunched forward like a T-Rex. It's just so relaxing. And like you were saying before, it's a good podcast game because like I just listen to YouTube videos and stuff while playing it. It's so great. I fucking love it. And I'm so addicted to that game. And I've only just started tackling Deity level, which is the highest level in difficulty, because I was dog shit at it before. It took me a long time to wrap my head around religious victories. So for anyone, I've spoken on this about this game before, but for anyone that's new to Civ 6, it's a top-down strategy game. It's very, very complex when you look at it from the outset. So it's one of those types of games where if you haven't played too many strategy games before, it does look pretty it's not inviting. It looks pretty tough to take on. I think it's better described as someone who's into those sort of games already. It's pretty much strategy game heaven for someone who's played strategy games before, because it's got
a particular genre called a 4X, if anyone's familiar with that. You guys heard of the term 4X before?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't, no.
So 4X games are games that are focused on explore, exploit, expand, and exterminate. So they're the four sort of pillars, if you like, of how you actually interact with the game. So Civ's got all those different elements when it comes to the different paths for victory, essentially.
Mm.
Yep. So
Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's one of those, it's funny that I was playing it only, you know, I just picked it up out of the blue again because I felt like playing that sort of game. I got the DLC just thrown into my hands. So the Frontier Pass DLC, for anyone that is familiar with Civ 6 and is excited to hear that they have new DLC, I have tried out the first wave, which is the Mayan Civilization Pack and Grand Columbia. So I haven't had a chance to play the Mayans because they looked boring as fuck. The benefits with that one looked terrible because it's really gimmicky. So their benefit is that your first six cities are really, really overpowered, but any more cities are really, really underpowered and dog shit. So like it doesn't favor an expansion type gameplay, and I don't think there's any gameplay that can be sustained into late game that is an expansionist, so I'm not interested. But Grand Columbia, fuck me, that is so much fun. So one of the best, if you played Civ 5 or Civ 4, one of the best civilizations that you could get, I think it was the Americans in Civ 5, where you had extra movement for all of your units. You could move further than anyone else. Yeah, and they removed that for Civ 6, so with Grand Columbia, they brought it back, and holy fuck, it's so easy to win. So if you want to win the game on easy mode, pick Grand Columbia. It's a lot of fun doing it. It's a great feel for a race, and it has me really excited about the upcoming DLC packs, because they brought in random shit that's just great, and you wouldn't be expecting from that game. Like they have meteor strikes. So you'll see random areas on the map go on fire, and they've introduced mechanics where if any area goes on fire, your rainforest and woods burn down, which isn't so much fun, but it's neat to look at.
It's like they brought in all the disaster elements of SimCity sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're slowly morphing into the original SimCity, I gotta say. It's becoming more and more like that. Which is great. It's not a flaw. And, you can expect more good stuff like that, come through with, as they roll out more every 2 months with the new DLC. I bought it up front, the full year pass, because why the fuck not? I buy everything that comes from Civ 6 because I fucking love that game, and anything that can get me playing that game from a new perspective with a new race, yeah, done deal. But yeah, I'd say price wise probably better off just buying them sporadically and figuring out which ones are the good ones and the bad ones. If Maya's not quite up your alley, and if you don't want to play the game on easy mode, maybe Grand Columbia's not great for you, but you do miss out on all those terrain bonuses and benefits, which is pretty cool.
Okay, so you don't have to just buy a part, like buy a season pass or something to get all this content. You can pick and choose what you want out of all these this DLC that they're releasing constantly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you can pick and choose. Obviously, you're going to have to pay a little bit more at the end game. But at this point in time, it doesn't look like you're going to be saving that much money. I think the difference between the two is if you purchase it all up front, you save maybe $5 to $10. And, you know, if you do figure out that there's one that's dog shit that gets released, you know, 2 or 4 months from now, and you go, yeah, I'm not going to get that one, that you pretty much saved the equivalent amount. So
this season pass that they've done aside, there is still a huge amount of content for this game that you can get already.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it'd take you a while to get through all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All of this DLC that I'm talking about, you don't need to worry about that if you haven't played the game yet. Pick up the base. It's fantastic. And then when you want to play a little bit more, then pick up the expansions, which are... Forget about Rise and Fall. That's boring. Just get Gathering Storm, which is amazing.
Fun side note as well. If you enjoy board games, pick up the Civ board game from Fantasy Flight Games. It's really freaking good.
Oh, shit. I've seen that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you played it. Awesome.
It is very cool. I've played both editions of it because I've actually done a second edition of it, which is a bit different. And they're both... Yeah. Superb games, really, really good. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, nice. So, are you a fan of the game Civ 6 itself, or the video game of Civ 6, Luke?
I played tons of it. Yeah, I haven't played it for a while. Yep. I wanted to jump back in when they announced the season pass because I knew that I had a few friends that were keen as well, and we've done some pretty epic over an entire weekend multiplayer Civ games before. Where I found that usually the smart way to play that is you set a turn limit so that you know that it's not going to go forever.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you introduce multiplayer, it can really start to increase the length of the game. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always that person that like needs fucking 5 minutes to take their turn because they weren't thinking about what they wanted to do while everyone else was doing their shit.
Every time.
Yeah. It drives me out the fucking wall.
It's good. But my co-host Matt is a huge sort of 4X game fan as well. He Stellaris is one of his favorite games of all time. So I've been trying to talk him into playing some Civ with me. So we'll see if that happens in the near future. I think it comes down to how much time we've got available. And when we invest our time in, you know, 100 plus hour JRPGs, then maybe that's a little tougher. So
Yeah, something like Persona 5 Royale. Yeah, finding time for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
My dear God, they're big games, those ones.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Is there any other games that you've been playing this week that you'd like to talk about, Luke?
Most of my additional gaming at the moment is Animal Crossing and Destiny 2. Destiny 2 is a game that I sink a lot of time in, and I usually play pretty heavily every time they launch a new season. I took a couple of months off this season that they're currently in to play other stuff, but I've kind of jumped back in for the final 4 weeks of it and played catch up and pretty much done everything I need to do within that space of time anyway, so that worked out well. But Animal Crossing's been an interesting beast. It's the sort of game that I know that I get addicted to very, very easily, but because I was a huge Stardew Valley fan, you know, any of those sort of farming sims or sort of, you know, settlement building sims, I tend to get quite sucked into. But as you guys know, this one has just been like a cultural phenomenon. Like the way that Animal Crossing has taken off globally, and almost every single person I know is playing it. It's just nuts. So,
yeah. Well, so have you been playing since release?
I started playing shortly after release because it was released simultaneously with Doom, and I played Doom first. I got into it maybe 2 days after everyone else did, and I have barely put it down since. So. It's a super interesting game. It's kind of weird. It's almost like, back in the old days when, you know, you might have been sucked into playing World of Warcraft or any other game that has like its daily sort of, missions or daily quests that you do. Animal Crossing is kind of like that too. You jump on and you do your dailies. Like you always run around and you dig up your fossils and check out what's at the shop and, you know, shake your fruit trees and, you know, you have that routine that you sort of settle into every single day. But I've just been particularly fascinated by some of the other stuff that's been happening around the place with this game. Like, it's like this weird stuff with, you know, Christopher Nolan sort of, you know, debuting a trailer for his new movie in like Fortnite, where these areas of pop culture are sort of meeting video games and combining in weird, wonderful ways. I don't know if you've seen, because we talked about it on our show a few weeks ago. Gary Witter, who's one of the writers of Rogue One, has actually started a late night talk show within Animal Crossing. So he actually streams that weekly, and he's got full on celebrity guests coming on as well. Like Elijah Wood was on the last one. He's had people from the games industry come on. as well. Danny Trejo was on an episode recently too. And it's just like, holy fucking shit. Like, this is bizarre where you see like a late night talk show that takes place entirely within a game like Animal Crossing and it's streamed like that. But it's exactly the same as a late night talk show. Like, it's still got comedy bits where people get up and get behind the mic and do like a skit. It's got full musical acts. It's got the whole sort of host sort of talking element with the guests. It's just through the looking glass weird. It's really quite bizarre. Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the cooler things to come out of all this coronavirus stuff, that's for sure. Yeah, I caught a little bit of the, I think it was the T-Pain episode, yeah. I think. I caught a little bit of that one. And yeah, like it's super surreal, but yeah, it is also really, really cool just to see video games just over time just become more and more embraced in the mainstream. It's really, really good. As weird as it is, and you know, I guess you can have your cynical view on all these Fortnite crossovers that you have with Marvel and Disney and stuff like that, it's still cool to see that it's really invaded pop culture nowadays.
I love most of it. The only one that I've truly hated is when they did the Fortnite crossover for Rise of Skywalker, where they actually included part of the story in the Fortnite event that never made it into the movie, which is it was like a Palpatine broadcast or something that announced his return. Yeah. And it just shat me that was the only way you could get that information by actually being engaged with the video game. So that was a bit of a miss, I think. But almost everything else they've done, like musical performances especially, I think are just phenomenal how they've crossed over and blended the two together. And in this environment where people are sort of seeking ways to engage with each other virtually because they can't necessarily do so in person, I think it's brilliant.
No, really cool. And I'm right there with you as far as Animal Crossing. I think I picked it up a couple of weeks after release. And my dear God, I had a lot of fun with it. But after I rolled the credits, and you know, everyone says that's when the real game starts, I started putting down some paths and whatnot, and I just went, what am I doing? And then it just stopped. And I don't know why it lost its thrill for me. I think the thing I had the most fun with was the turnip market and just the whole crazy meta behind that, you know, websites like Turnip Exchange and stuff like that. Yeah, Lockie hates it. Lockie can't stand Animal Crossing.
Oh,
so.
My God.
Look, we have spoken a fair bit about Animal Crossing on the show, but definitely check out Animal Talking. It is really cool. It's really unique. Really clever idea. Gary Witter's awesome as well too. He does a fantastic job. He's also, I think he still appears on Kinda Funny, their podcast as well too.
Yeah, he does the Wednesday spot for them fairly often. So, yep.
That's right, So, yeah, definitely check that one out. But that'll do us this week for our gaming impressions, and that'll do us this week for news to reviews. Thank you so much, Luke, for joining us this week. It's been a lot of fun. Once again, let everyone know where they can find you and everything you do with Party Loaded.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. I'll just give you the one link because we have several and it's easier just to remember one. So just check us out on stream at twitch.tv/partyloaded. We are on every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. Australian Western Standard Time. So look up whatever the equivalent translation of that is to your local time, or just check out our schedule and you'll find us there. So that's it. Thanks very much.
Great, Luke. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we'll pop all those links into the description in the podcast description, so you can find all of that. But if you want to tell us anything you thought about the episode, you can send us an email to news2reviewspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can also check us out on all the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Twitter is probably the best place to keep track of everything we're doing. Our Twitter handle is @news2reviews, and that's with a number 2 instead of the word 2. But yeah, a big thanks again to Luke for joining us. Everyone go check out Party Loaded. It's bloody awesome, fantastic show. And thank you again, Lockie, for joining me again for another week. I love doing this every week. It's so much bloody fun.
I'm chuffed. I feel so warm and fuzzy inside. So for everyone listening, definitely if you want to send more hate mail in regards to how out of touch with reality I am because I'm not playing Animal Crossing, which is apparently amazing, please make sure that you send a very long email because I absolutely read all of them. I don't. I really don't. But do it anyway. Do it anyway. It sustains me. Thank you.
And everyone out there, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another.
Scrabbles.